We've all heard the warning, don't judge a book by its cover. We should probably add, don't judge a book by its title to that list of literary pitfalls to avoid. That's especially the case when it comes to Britt Bennett's The Mothers. Who are the mothers of the title? Well, it's complicated.
This is Marginalia, a production of KMUW Wichita.
Marginalia. Notes in the margin of a book.
Notes, commentary, and similar material written in the margin of a book.
Comments and notes which are incidental
or additional to
the main topic in the margin of a book.
At its core, The Mothers is about a love triangle. 6 months after losing her mother to suicide, 17-year-old Nadia Turner becomes involved with her preacher's son, Luke Shepherd. The resulting pregnancy is aborted, and immediately after, Nadia is hired at her church to assist Mrs. Shepherd. At the church, Nadia becomes friends with another girl her age, Aubrey Evans, who has also been abandoned by her mother, though not through suicide, but by turning a blind eye on abuse. After the summer ends, Nadia, no longer pregnant, moves on with her life by moving away to attend college and only returns home to attend Aubrey's wedding, to Luke Shepherd. So are these the mothers from the title? I recently asked author Britt Bennett that question and more. I'm Beth Golay, this is Marginalia, and here's our conversation. The mothers of the title, they refer primarily to a circle of church women, is that right?
The mothers refers to the church mothers, who are this group of elderly women at the church, who are kind of all seeing and, at least to themselves, all knowing about the lives of everyone in the church congregation. They gather in order to pray for the members of the church and also to gossip about the members of the church. So they are kind of this collective voice and this chorus of women who narrate the events of the story and comment on the lives of these younger characters.
And so they try to step in, for better or for worse sometimes, when the mothers of both Nadia and Aubrey were unable to help their daughters. But were these women helpful?
I think in their own minds, perhaps. But I was interested in the way that gossip shapes a community, the way that gossip is, you know, a form of storytelling, but telling stories about other people that they are not necessarily agreeing to be told. So I liked the idea of these older women who are largely dismissed by people of the church. They're kind of given this honor as these elder women, but also kind of dismissed to some extent as sort of these gossips. And I really liked the idea of them being the ones who got to actually tell the story of what was happening to the church, the story that ends up having really huge implications in the lives of all the characters and the lives of themselves.
I really liked the way you started each chapter with the women. They were almost cryptic. Sometimes I wasn't exactly sure who they were speaking about. Mm-hmm. They were lyrical. They would add their collective ages and self-proclaim how much wisdom they had. It was really well done. So you started writing this novel when you were 17. Had the chapters started that way, or did you change the format? Did they form later?
Right. Yeah. No, the addition of the mothers as kind of a narrative framing device was something that came about a lot later. Once I was in graduate school and working on my novel in Ann Arbor, I think originally I was mostly just interested in the lives of these teenage characters, these young adult characters, because that's where I was in my life. But as I got a little bit older, I became interested in what these characters would be like as they got older. And I also started to see the book as a story that wasn't just about these young people, but was also about the entire community. So the idea of the church mothers kind of narrating and structuring the novel was something that kind of stumbled into when I was in graduate school. And I began to think about the fact that I was kind of hearing this narrative voice as I was writing and started wondering what would happen if I located that in actual characters who existed in the same world as the characters that I was already thinking about. So that was definitely something that I happened on later and kind of accidentally backed my way into. But it was definitely a fun part of the book to write, to try to channel this older voice.
You did take time to write this. You started when you were 17. And I mean, you worked on it through graduate school. Is that right?
Yeah. So about 7 or 8 years and, from when I started to when I sold it.
And did you find like you were able to go back and add the mothers, the lyrical narrative at the beginning of each chapter? Do you think that you were able to create this fantastic book because you were able to just take your time with it and you really didn't have pressure? I mean, I wonder now, I mean, I know you're working on other books, and I mean, wouldn't it be lovely just to be able to craft this piece of art and not have the deadline of...
Yeah. Well, I mean, I also was really fortunate because I was in school while I was working on the book. So not only did I not have, like, any type of sort of, like, pressure of deadlines or anything, but I also didn't have to worry about, you know, feeding myself because I was, you know, I was in college and I, you know, I had whatever part-time job I needed to, you know, but it wasn't that same pressure of being out in the world and having to work a full-time job and everything. So I was really fortunate that I was able to assemble a book over such a long period of time. And with, you know, the only pressure I really had was the pressure I put on myself of wanting to write the best book I could do and wanting to really make this book work. So, yeah, I was very fortunate. I don't know what that book would have looked like if written under different circumstances.
Yeah. Okay, so I want to get back to some of the other mothers in the book. There were just other mothers that were not part of the church congregation necessarily. Right. So, Mrs. Shepherd.
She was my most, probably my favorite character to write because she's kind of this woman who is this very sort of focused woman who does a lot of the work for the church, but kind of behind the scenes. She doesn't get all the glory that her husband gets. And she ends up making some pretty huge decisions throughout the book that affects the lives of people in her family and the church. And she's this kind of tough, steely character that I really enjoyed writing because, you know, I think the best characters are characters who do things that we may not like or we may not agree with, but at least in their own mind, it's justified and it's something that makes sense. And in her case, it's actually the right thing. So I love the idea of characters who are like that. And I had a lot of fun writing her because she's the type of character who does and says things that a lot of us would never do or say.
Okay, what about Elise Turner?
Yeah, so Nadia's deceased mother, who, you know, also was a character who I think is pretty enigmatic. She's killed herself and does not, you know, exist within the present world of the book and only kind of exists in Nadia's memories of her. But, yeah, I was interested in her as a character. And, you know, I didn't want to sort of neatly explain away why she had committed suicide because I think that's one of the tragedies of suicide that we can never often we can never exactly know why someone decides to end their own life. But yeah, she's a character who I think is kind of enshrouded in mystery throughout the book.
Now, I don't recall if this person had, if you revealed her first name, but what about Aubrey's mother?
Right. Aubrey's mom is also, I think, somewhat of an enigmatic character. She has chosen to abandon her daughter, but under different circumstances than the way that Nadia was abandoned. So I liked the idea of those two girls having, sharing both this loss of a mother figure, but under these very different circumstances and having to cope with that as they build a friendship.
What about Cherry?
Yeah, actually, I Skyped into a book club this weekend and had some questions about her, which was probably the first time I'd been asked about her as a character. You know, she's this woman who befriends Luke and in some ways mothers him. And I liked the idea of them having that kind of dynamic as she's kind of this older woman in his life. And their relationship's not necessarily romantic or anything, but she becomes a mother and a confidant to him when he's desperately lacking one.
And then the last two I will ask about are Monique and Casey.
Right. So this is Aubrey's older sister and her sister's girlfriend who are, I would probably say, the most stable and supportive sort of maternal figures in the book. And I just like the idea, again, of people who take care of kids that aren't actually their biological kids, people choosing to mother those that they're not necessarily biological mothers of. So I like that idea of sort of motherhood being something that people often choose and not necessarily something that's sort of bestowed upon you.
Okay, so in the first chapter, you talk about secrets and how good secrets have a taste about them. And there are so many secrets in this book. You know, Aubrey was continually raped by her mother's boyfriend, Nadia's abortion, Luke's grief. Should secrets be kept?
I don't know if they should be, but I think that they are. And I think that there's something inherently interesting about that, what parts of our lives we choose to share with people and what parts we don't. I think Nadia and Aubrey are so close to each other, but they both keep these really monumental secrets from each other. And I think that's kind of, I don't know, to me that felt real and it felt like one of the sad things about life and that we can be so close to people but still feel like we need to hide parts of ourselves away.
You know, later in the book, Aubrey meets a man for lunch at the pier And she had mm-hmm. been communicating with him during his tour in Iraq. And when he returned, she agreed to a lunch date, which ended with a shared piece of pie. And Luke hears about this pie from a man at church, 1 John, which I found so ironic because on the first page of the book, you wrote about 1 John being seen cozying up at a brunch with another woman. And it turns out that that woman was a great niece. And so that secret was attributed to church gossip. But when 1 John tells Luke about seeing his wife, he says, "I don't mean to stir up no mess, but I'd want to know if it was my wife." Was this a double standard?
I mean, I think it is. I think for me, that was thinking about the sort of circularity of gossip in the sense that we can all be sort of victimized by it, but also are purveyors of it at the same time. So I liked the idea of kind of circling back like that. This person who had been wrongfully accused of, you know, of doing something because of the church, and people just being nosy, and him in turn doing that same thing. But I also do think there's certainly a double standard at play. Luke, who's somebody who is not the model husband at all, is outraged at the idea of his wife having this lunch with this other guy. So I think it's definitely a gender double standard. But also, I liked the idea of gossip being something that we can all be sort of victimized by, but also spread about other people.
That was Britt Bennett, author of The Mothers, which was published by Riverhead Books. Thanks for joining us for Marginalia. Discover new episodes at KMUW.org or through iTunes. Marginalia was produced at KMUW Wichita. Our editor is Luann Stevens. Our engineer is John Cyphers, and I am the producer. This is Marginalia, and for KMUW, I'm Beth Golay.